We're going to continue on with Zen this week. Did anybody have any thoughts about last week's session and Zen and the meaning of being present? No? Okay. The difficulty many people find with the approach to Zen is, if I'm in the present and only in the present, what about goals? Doesn't that mean I'll be abandoning goals and where I want to go? Or what about responding to something that happened in the past? Shouldn't I recall things or experience that happened in the past? In the Zen, pardon?
I think we touched on that a little bit last week, didn't we?
Yeah, we did touch on that in the last week. And you'll notice that sometimes we review things several times from different perspectives because they don't usually sink in one discussion.
No, it's a good thing. It's a good thing that you do this.
Yeah. Goals, being in the present doesn't mean you don't have certain aspirations and certain areas and directions you want to move. But it does mean that you don't attach to them and become enslaved to them, so that you can't see what's taking place. An example of that may be a person who enters, say, university, and they're taught to believe that they should be studying a mathematician or a pre-med or something like that, when actually they're much more suited to be something artistic or creative in the arts. And yet they follow through on their plan of study because that's what they're expected to by whoever or by themselves. And in the end, the time spent is not wasted because they learned something else, but it's also not focused on what they really want to do in the moment. And at the same time, wanting to be present in the moment doesn't mean being ignorant of the fact that there are other things that we need to be aware of, like being able to be in a safe environment, having enough food to eat, clothes to wear, and a community around us that's supportive. Unless someone is in a pre-existing community, which monasteries were, and which different groups of people were, then those things are very real considerations. Zen is not abandoning the understanding and realization that we have to take care of ourselves, but it's asking us to be present in each moment that we decide to take care of ourselves in a way so that we're doing what is in the moment and not something that's attached to some other time, like carrying a psychological burden from the past or acting in a way specifically that we expect we'll need to use in the future. So the question becomes, okay, let's say someone is an athlete and they're competing and they're trying to excel in their athletic form. Well, isn't that something stuck with the future? Well, if I have to compete, I understand I want to be the best, I want to be a champion. But the question really is the athlete asking of themselves they want to be the best they can be, or are they asking of themselves, I want to be the best in the world to prove to others that I am the best? And that is two different perspectives, because the second perspective is really about ego. And it's about, I want to be better than others. Whereas in fact, what Zen is saying, one should be the best that they can be in reality at that moment. So Zen is not cutting a person any slack and saying, oh, you can relax, you don't have to achieve, you don't have to accomplish. What it's saying is the commitment you have at the moment should be maximized with full attention. And so there was a slew of books that were published, I think it was about 30 years or 40 years ago by now, actually, because I would have been in my 20s, right? Where they said Zen and the Art of Skiing, or Zen and the Art of Golf, or the Tao of Golf, the Tao of Skiing, they're all very similar, which was a way to introduce for the first time to athletics. Now it may seem very de rigueur or very obvious to sports people how they have to be in the present, but 40 years ago, it wasn't at all. And all these people started writing on how you can play a Zen round of golf by just being the ball and being the swing and being in the environment. But now I think actually, if I recall what I read about golf in competitions. That is now how a lot of master golfers describe. They're in the present. They're there right now. They are the ball flying through the air, approaching the green, or the skier is the actual flow through the moguls down the ski slope and in the snow. Or oftentimes in high jump, in the ski jump rather, people will describe, they visualize their jump before they actually do the jump, and therefore they follow that. All of that is part of being in the present and being aware. And so when practicing for those events, the person is practicing to the full knowledge of being present and a sense of everything that's going on, so that being in the present becomes a habit. We spoke last week about habits. Habits are things that can hold us back, because many of our habits are focused on patterns of attachment and clinging. And if we give in to patterns of attachment and clinging as our habits, oh, that's the way my father did it. That's the way his father did it. That's the way his father did it. So we do it because of tradition. That's just another way of saying habits and clinging. It doesn't mean anything that it works. In fact, usually a lot of that ends up being a dead end that people get stuck in and becoming very unhappy. And then what's created is usually an orthodoxy and belief that doesn't tolerate any kind of change or different point of view. And one of the things that makes things vital is the dynamic of change, which is very, very important, because change is part of nature, it's part of life. Anytime someone demands non-change, or this is the ceremony, this is the ritual, this is the way we do this, this is why we do this, because we've always done it this way, what one is going to be faced with is a stagnant and dying way of doing something. To have dynamic and have life, one has to be open to the change, as we see in nature. And yet, through the changes, there is still some continuation. So, for example, a tree grows, and every year a new branch comes out. And every year, we'll talk about not annuals, new leaves come out. And then fall comes, and the leaves fall. And then winter comes and the tree is barren. And then spring comes and new buds happen. And then summer approaches and leaves are there again. So there is a continuation in the nature of the tree. But at any moment, the tree is in the present. Because if the tree was not in the present, it wouldn't be able to continue living. But the tree doesn't think about, oh, I've just had a very cold winter, so I'm not going to produce leaves in the summer. Or the tree doesn't come to fall and think about, oh, last year I lost all my leaves, so why should I produce new leaves next year? So there is a continuum that takes place, but it is within the framework of being present at every moment. Does that make sense? Is that clear? So how does that relate to us? Because we're not trees, obviously. We're living beings, and we relate back on ourselves. Well, we move through time similarly, and yet with time, we change. But if we address each moment as it is there and don't get stuck on ideas, then we can be present with each moment. So understanding that, and understanding that that's truth, right away has immediate impact on our lives. Oh, you should eat this to be healthy. Oh, you should eat this to avoid this in later life. Oh, you should eat this to avoid that later in life. Well, that's great. Oh, statistics show that this is right. Statistics show that that is right. Probability shows that this. A good example of that, and I always use the example with patients, is the whole margarine fiasco. I don't know if you remember that. Probably Senem and Masha don't even know what margarine is, because I think it was kicked out. You know what it is? Yeah. When I was a teenager, my dad was convinced margarine is God's gift to humankind. Everybody was convinced. because they knew that heart disease came from cholesterol, which is not necessarily true, which came from fat, which is not necessarily true. Now we know that's not exactly true. There are much many more subtle details. We know that people who run intensively and eat low-fat diets like Jim Fix can die of a heart attack. He wrote the Runner's Bible, which was the book on running in the 70s and the 80s. And we know that people that are overweight can live to 100 years old and eating their traditional high-fat diets, depending what kind of fat, what kind of stress. So if we cling to some belief system because we're told we should cling to it without being aware of what's really going on inside ourselves, that's just clinging. And we may fall within the statistical range, we may not. But as unique individuals, it would be far more efficient and effective if we were able to pay attention to what is going on inside us at each moment. For example, in our bodies, we go through different chemical changes all the time. We have neurotransmitters that are shifting. We have proteins, we have fats, we have carbohydrates, and we have hormones. We have thyroid hormones, we have sex hormones like progesterone, testosterone, estrogen. They're all shifting. And when they shift, our moods change. All right, so today we're all female except for me, so I don't need to remind all of you what it's like to go through premenstrual situations. But it's not just women, because I can tell you as a man that when testosterone rises, boy, we can get very angry and very aggressive. So as these things go through, if we don't have a way to measure them, by measure them, I mean to understand them, to sense them, which is being in the present, we become a victim of the change. Does everybody understand that? And everybody around us as well. And literally, for example, when testosterone goes through the roof, we may have a literal victim because someone may murder somebody else, because that's what testosterone can do. Right? So what happens is that the requirement to be attentive, to be present, to be in the moment of what's actually going on, is actually the most important thing to maintaining a happy, balanced, and healthy existence. And yet that in itself requires effort at first, practice, discipline, self-discipline. Because the simplest tool, or let's ask, what do you think is the simplest tool to start this process of self-awareness?
Breathing.
Breathing. And what goes with breathing? Say a position. We call it, okay, sitting. Anybody? Sitting. But obviously we don't mean sitting, always sitting. You can be standing, you can be lying down. But when we say sitting and breathing, it's the simplest thing one can do, isn't it? To sit down anywhere, rather as comfortable as one can be, and take a few deep breaths. And by that, I mean, for example, you could be standing waiting for the train or the tube or the subway and on the platform, and you can move into a sitting, which means get comfortable position standing and just take a few breaths. And by learning to do that, whenever we feel that we're not present, we begin to learn how to be present. And we take away the distractions, and we move into the very moment that we are in by our breath. Our breath brings us back to our body. Our body has to live in the moment. But our brains don't often let our bodies live in the moment. Oh, we're attached to, I was wronged, you know, by this person 3 days ago. And the reason I'm sticking to that is because when I was a kid, my parents or did this or my uncle did that or whatever, whatever. And so I attach to the feeling. That feeling becomes an emotion and I can't let go. That's our mind. But the minute we breathe and we fill our air, our lungs full of air, and we release it once, twice, we're back in the function of the body, which is in the moment. Because the body can't say, oh, I'm not going to breathe now, I'll breathe in a couple minutes. Right? that doesn't work. So the breathing brings us back to the moment. And that, in essence, is also what Zen is all about in a tangible, physical way. Because when you take a breath in stress, if you start thinking, oh, now I'm going to take a long breath, or I'm going to take a short breath, or now I'm going to take a deep breath, or now I'm going to take a shallow breath, you've just added more stress to the situation. Oh, but I know long breaths help. Well, maybe it does, maybe it doesn't. Just by breathing, let the body breathe, which is why I personally believe the Buddha emphasized natural breathing in his Vipassana and his Samadhi teaching. Not deep breathing, not any of the yogic breathing. There are millions of yogic breathings, and they're all good when they're appropriate at the time. None of them are bad. Some are extreme, some are less extreme, but in the right appropriate moment and situation, they can all be very beneficial. But the Buddha, in his early sutras, emphasized simple, natural breathing. Because the minute you just let the body determine what the breath was going to be, you are in the present. The minute you tell the body what kind of breath to be, you're no longer in the present. Everybody understand that? Okay, so you can take a deep breath, let it out. Oh, that feels good. But that wasn't in the present. That was, I'm taking a deep breath because I know that if I take a deep breath and let it out through my mouth, I can relax my muscles, so I'm going to feel better afterwards. Everybody understand that? Yes? No? Yeah. But it's harder to just relax the body and then take a normal, natural breath. And with the mind, with the inhalation, I calm the body. And with the exhalation, I calm the body. Well, why do we ask the mind to say that? Because it's the mind that's taking the body out of the present. And by bringing the mind to the breath without trying to instruct the breath and let it be natural, the mind has to get on board to be in the moment. And this is without saying that long, deep breaths help or they don't help. They're all appropriate at the right time in the right place. Now can all be tremendously beneficial as well as detrimental if they're used at the wrong time, in the wrong situation. And so with being in the present, everything then begins to flow. And this is the focus, I believe, of what Zen is trying to teach us. Be in the moment so things can flow. And as we continue with the Xin Xing Ming, I think we'll start to understand why.